Linus Hall is the brewmaster at Yazoo Brewing Company. In college, he majored in civil engineering. But there are a lot of legends that surround his life. According to Alan Fay, the taproom manager at Yazoo, Linus also had a minor.
Eastern European basket weaving?
When you think about it, it actually kind of makes sense.
Take grains and you weave them together.
Several of the original baskets he used to carry grain to the brewery in the old days are now in the Linus Hall wing of the Smithsonian.
See, that sounds true.
It might be true.
It's not. Yazoo is a proud supporter of all neighbors everywhere sharing stories over a pint or a finely woven basket. One Saturday morning, I needed a haircut. So over a cup of coffee at a local coffee shop, I pulled up my bank account on my phone. I needed to see if I had enough money to treat myself to something fancy or if I had to go the cheap and fast route. That's when I looked up and I saw it, like a shining beacon in the distance. A third option. The Razor Sharp Barbershop. Try saying that three times fast. It was a barbershop literally attached to the coffee shop I'm at all the time. Apparently, I need to pay better attention to my surroundings. So taking it as a sign, I went in. There were fluorescent lights, a picture of Martin Luther King on the wall. Next to that, a few of those posters with some generic-looking haircuts to help you choose what you would like. Well, in the center of it all, cutting hair, I met the subject of this story. A man who says the word man a lot and who uses sayings I have never heard before in my life. Ronnie, how's your day going, man?
Been a blessed day, man. So far, so good, man. It's like orange juice.
How so?
Hey, man, I tell you what, man. It's like when you drink the orange juice, man, it's just like you worked out. Everything's great. I mean, hey, it's just a great start for early morning.
Ronnie is white, 28 years old. He's a towering guy with tattoos, a large square jaw, and an immaculately manicured chinstrap beard. Right now, a guy named Steve is in Ronnie's barber chair. He's been a regular for a while.
Probably 50 haircuts now.
How often do you get a cut?
I try to get in here at least once a week, but as you can see, it's probably been about 2 weeks now.
A lot of Ronnie's customers come in every week, partially because Ronnie's haircuts are only $15.
We keep it down just in case a person can't afford it, but at the same time, man, people always just look out for you, man, and it's just a wonderful thing.
Ronnie cuts hair in the same area that I live in.
We call it Woodbine.
He takes care of the neighborhood. The neighborhood takes care of him.
I don't even know how much my haircut is. I usually just hand him $20, $25 just because that's what I think it's worth.
Ronnie is respectable, the kind of guy you let use a straight razor on your neck. When you think about it, a lot of trust is placed in a barber. But my guess is people in the neighborhood may not have always trusted Ronnie. He didn't always take care of others so well.
You know, we was on the way out the door, and something came over me. We had a gun on the people, and I was like, hey, I told my brother, I was like, man, we don't got no mask on. I need you to shoot these people, man, so we don't get identified. And
you said that.
That's what I said. That's what I said. I remember that.
I'm Jacob Lewis, and from Nashville Public Radio, you're listening to Neighbors, a show about what connects us. Today's story is called The Barbershop Duet, Part 1, Ronnie. This is a two-part series about the role that two different barbers play in their community. Today we hear how Ronnie has always been a neighborhood fixture, just in two very different ways. First of all, I have to just say that I love this guy. Every time I've seen him in his barbershop or called him up on the phone, he's been both hilarious and incredibly encouraging. But Ronnie's life started off rough, like really rough.
It was basically, man, just being born into a household of, I mean, you could say struggle, but I guess, you know, knowing what I know now as a grown man, it's really just bad decisions.
His mom was addicted to alcohol. For his dad, it was crack. So to get away, little Ronnie would try and stay over at other friends' houses.
And when I stayed the night, I was trying to stay for like a month or two, man, because at my house, man, it was just crazy. I mean, the lights would be off, wouldn't be no food in the house, man. It would just be the water be cut off, man, and for just weeks at a time.
No one was really taking care of Ronnie. Not only did he not have the basics, but when he turned 13, He started to feel other pressures too.
Now you gotta have the best clothes and the best shoes, and the things that used to be okay started changing.
So he tried to figure out how to provide for himself. He looked to some of the only examples he had, older neighborhood kids that were selling drugs. At 13 years old, let that sink in for a second, at 13, he asked if they could loan him weed to get started.
What we call is fronting. You know, won't you front me some of that, man, and let me see what I can do with it. And my cousin and my brother was kind of hesitant. They was like, nah, man, you don't need to do this, man. I was like, look here, man, you know, I need money. I need things that I should be provided with by my family, but I don't have them. So basically, man, they started off with an ounce.
1 ounce of marijuana was what it took to give Ronnie a means to take care of himself, a way to get shoes, clothes, food. Things grew rapidly from there. He went from selling marijuana to pills, then cocaine. By 15, he said he had done almost every drug. There wasn't a cap on how much money he wanted to get, so he and some friends decided to diversify their portfolio and started robbing houses. But houses were small time.
16 years old, we end up robbing a car lot.
Before you hear this next part, I just want to acknowledge that there is a strange tension between the seriousness of the crimes that Ronnie was committing and the natural immaturity and stupid fun that surrounds just being a kid.
And I tell you a funny thing about that, man, I never forget this, is a buddy of mine, we was on top of the car lot, and this guy had a tree limb cutter, one of the long poles with a little jagged blade on the end of it. And man, this guy was so crazy. He was like, Ronnie, I'm gonna cut the wire off of the whole building, man, so we don't gotta worry about no alarms or nothing. So I'm talking about a wire as fat as your calf muscle. And this guy's up there with a tree limb cutter sawing on it, a live wire. So long story short, man, he's sawing on this thing, then out of nowhere, all you hear is boom. And I'm talking about smoke went everywhere. You seen big, it looked like a 4th of July show. I kind of duck back and I look over there at the guy. Man, he's like in the fetal position, man. Just hands around his knees, man. And I'm like, hey, you okay? And I promise you, man, when he said, yeah, like a smoke ring came out of his mouth, man. This guy, man, I said, man, I can't believe this, man. I'm just glad he's all right.
They all got away from the scene in new cars. But one of the guys was too proud of his ride and just wouldn't get rid of it. So he drove around in his stolen car and got pulled over. He told the police everything, which meant several cops showed up at Ronnie's house. He was arrested and sent to a juvenile prison. When he got out, he went back to selling drugs, this time out of a drug house with a few other people. The mindset was get as much money as possible. There was no end to what they would do to try and get it. And that way of living took Ronnie to some extreme places. One day, he was asleep. It was around 4 a.m, and some of his friends started yelling at him.
And they was like, Ronnie, get up, man. I was like, what?
His friends had a guy they wanted to rob. He was supposed to have $50,000 in his apartment.
Like, yeah, man, come on, hurry. I remember it was snowing outside, and so we got in the car, man, and drove over there, man. It's like 4:30 a.m, and we go over to these apartments, man, and start kicking on his door and kick it in.
There was a man and woman inside. Ronnie and his friends ripped the place apart looking for the money. They couldn't find anything.
It ended up being the wrong people. You know, we was on the way out the door, and something came over me. We had a gun on the people, and I was like, hey, I told my brother, I was like, man, we don't got no mask on. I need you to shoot these people, man, so we don't get identified. I mean, I wasn't that type of person, but it's so weird how you can really just feel like you're that tough or you're that ruthless. And coming from where we come from, like, man, it's so crazy and just so normal. If we don't want to get identified, this is what we got to do because they've already seen us. My brother had the gun on these people, man, and I whispered in his ear. I said, hey, man, I'm leaving. Take care of them, and we'll be out there waiting on you. And, man, he didn't do it. Thank God he didn't do it. And I praise God for that to this day, man.
Ronnie and his friends got away, but Ronnie was brought in for a lineup and got ID'd. He went to prison for 3 years. But it was there that he learned something that would eventually change the course of his life. In prison, he learned how to cut hair.
Crazy thing about it was, man, is that we actually used to cut hair with a razor and a comb.
Just a straight razor blade that he attached to an ordinary comb. It was a way for Ronnie to survive on the inside. And it was the closest thing he had ever had to a real job. If an inmate wanted something that was difficult, they'd have to pay him an extra honey bun. And no, that's not a euphemism. I mean the actual pastry. That was the currency in prison.
I used to line people up. I took a liking to it, had a gift and a talent.
Eventually, Ronnie got out. It was during the holidays, on a day that's pretty easy to remember.
It was December 26th. They let me out a day after Christmas.
He went back home. He was now 21 years old. Maybe things would be different.
Man, the thing is, man, the environments didn't change. Mom was getting evicted. She was getting thrown out of her house in like 2 weeks.
Big Ronnie was back to where 13-year-old Ronnie was, without the basics. So he had to make a decision. Sell drugs, rob people, or do something more legitimate. He was half-heartedly trying to straighten out his life. He applied to a barber school and got in. His mom was a manager at a Subway and got him a job. But he found that Subway money isn't anything close to drug money.
Basically, all I did, man, was save my money up. I probably worked there for like a month. Saved up enough money, man, to start selling weed again.
He had been away from the neighborhood for a few years, so he had to get his name as a dealer back out there.
So, man, I remember being at Walmart, man. I was just walking around with like little joints. And I was like, hey, man, you know, try this, man. If you like it, do you smoke? And, oh, yeah, I smoke, man. Hey, man, you know, I kind of survey the scene and look at people, man. And I ain't saying every hippie I gave a joint, but people that look pretty cool, laid back, or look like, you know, might be from the neighborhood or the struggle. Man, I'd approach me like, hey, man, you know what I'm saying? Little $5 sack, man. Try this out, man, and, you know, give you my number. And if you like it, man, call me, man. I'll take care of you. You ain't got to worry about getting shorted or anything like that, man. So basically, it started building relationships, man. Building relationships with weed.
And the thing was, Ronnie was good at connecting with people. As he built up his clientele, he started to have enough money to get harder drugs. The big thing at the time was called Loratabs. That's hydrocodone. Selling that was the big time. All of a sudden, his mom was taken care of. He had cars, money.
Felt like I finally made it.
But at age 21, surrounded by his new empire, something felt wrong.
I remember going to church one day, and like this, I wouldn't say a voice, but I would say a conviction in my heart, and a thought arose in my mind that God wanted me to put the drugs that I was selling on the altar. And the altar, you know, is kind of like a meeting place with God where you come in agreement with him.
He thought just maybe he should stop dealing. But instead, he took another route to deal with his guilt.
I felt like I was justifying it by putting $200-$300 in the offering plate.
Week in, week out, he tried to pay off that nagging voice in his head. Until one day, something happened that really got his attention.
I remember I ended up getting pulled over. And this is a real crazy story. This is a real, real crazy story.
That truly crazy story is coming up after the break. This episode of Neighbors is brought to you by Work in Progress, a new weekly show from Slack about the meaning and identity we find in work. I think this show is super interesting. You'll hear stories like the one about a guy who is a professional Snap traveler, which means he makes a living traveling and sharing it on Snapchat. Or one I'm really looking forward to about Thornton Blackburn, a slave in the 1830s who escaped and found work as a hackney cab driver in Toronto. Work in Progress is hosted by Dan Meisner and is out now on SiriusXM and iTunes. More info at slack.com/podcast or on Twitter at Slack Stories. Jacob Lewis here. We're about to hear Ronnie's crazy and incredible story. One day, Ronnie was driving around in his Chevy Tahoe, having just placed $25,000 in the tire jack compartment. He made a turn and didn't use his blinker.
I remember the police hit the lights on me.
Ronnie panics because taped under the hood was a couple pounds of marijuana, a bag of Loratabs, and a pistol. Oh, and don't forget about the $25,000 in his tire jack. There would be no doubt that he was a drug dealer. The officer walks over to Ronnie.
He said, man, you got license or insurance?
Ronnie didn't. The officer asks for his name and walks back to his car.
So he comes back, man, about 5 minutes later. He's like, hey, did you find anything with your name on it? I'm like, man, unfortunately, I didn't. So I kind of had my hand on top of the window like this, you know, playing it cool. just out of nowhere, he grabs my hand real hard and he's like, get out the car. And here I am. I know I got all of this on me. And he's pulling me out the car. And at this time, he's like, hey, man, are you smoking any weed? Your whole car smells like weed. You got some weed in there? And I'm like, you know, I'm still trying to play it off. I'm like, no, sir. I'm like, I just smoked a joint, you know, and I threw it out right when I seen you, trying to play it off like that's what it is. Sir, it's not the 2 pounds up under my hood that's been heated up from the engine.
Ronnie says the police officer threw him in the back of the cop car.
And you talking about just the worst feeling in the world, like to finally feel like you made it in that misconception of what making it truly consists of, to everything that you got at this time tied up in this car that the police are about to search.
Several officers showed up and started going through the car. Ronnie says he started praying.
I said, Lord, I said, you know my heart. You know my intentions. You know everything I'm doing. I said, Lord, I pray that you confuse their minds and lead them away from everything that's in this car. Give me a chance because you know I'm feeding my family. I'm taking care of my brothers. And Lord, that I want to do right. Just show me the way. Man, I prayed that prayer. And I'm telling you, this ain't no magic trick. This ain't no me making up or adding anything to this story, not even in the least bit. Man, I had 4 12-inch speakers in the back of my truck.
The cops pulled them out of the way.
Like they was intentionally going for the jack. They never reached for the jack. They put the speakers all the way back.
So they didn't find the money, but he still had the drugs and gun under his hood. Ronnie watches an officer messing with the latch on his hood. Everything to Ronnie's name was in that car. But then something crazy happened.
The guy never raised the hood.
You see, Ronnie had somehow accidentally dropped 2 ounces of weed under his driver's seat.
I don't know how, because I just put it in big Ziploc bags and put it on the hood.
He also had forgotten that he had $8,500 in a pair of jeans in the back. Having found those 2 things, the police felt satisfied that they had uncovered everything. He just looked like a small-time dealer to them. So as the cop car pulled out to take Ronnie to jail for the 2 ounces, they passed by the Tahoe.
And this is what blows my mind still to this day. Like, gives me chills all over my body. The hood was ajar. There was no reason at all for the guy not to raise the hood.
And the crazier thing still, a friend bailed Ronnie out of jail, and he ended up getting his car back. And the cops never found anything. Ronnie was ready to make a change in his life. He graduated from barber school, but only because he'd been paying someone to clock in and out for him to get enough hours. The only way that he'd ever been able to really take care of himself was dealing drugs.
You know, I want to really mean something. I want to make my life count. I want to do something different. I'm tired of this emptiness on the inside, and I want it to go away. And I said, Lord, whatever I got to do, I'll do it.
But Ronnie had 1,000 pills left. And rather than just flushing them down the toilet, he decided he was going to sell them all and then walk away for good.
It was the day after Christmas. That's so crazy. I just now remembered that. It was December 26th.
The anniversary of the day he got out of prison.
The day I got out, that just hit me. I ain't never even realized that. I got to the neighborhood about 10 o'clock, and I had sold 800 pills and probably made $5,000 in 2 hours.
Then Ronnie went over to an older couple's house to hang out and play with a Nintendo Wii they had gotten for Christmas. When all of a sudden, the police showed up. Maybe someone snitched on him, he's not sure. But Ronnie was handcuffed, and that's when he realized he still had 200 pills in the inside pocket of his coat. So when the police took their hands off of him for a second, he ran. In his handcuffs, he was trying to do flips on the ground to get the pills out of his coat. He was caught near a church with the drug still on him. He served 90 days in jail. When his time was done, he was glad the last of his pills were taken away. He was finally out. He went home ready to move on with his life. When he was confronted with where he had been,
I went in my closet and was cleaning all my shoes out, and I found 200 pills, and it was probably worth $2,500.
This had happened so many times before. He had been given another chance, and the allure of making money, providing for himself, rising up in the neighborhood, had always proved to be too much. But this time, he didn't think twice.
I basically just flushed them all down the toilet and just quit. Just quit the game cold turkey, man. And, that's what kind of all this barbering started to really play in and really get in context.
So Ronnie had already graduated from barber school, but he technically couldn't cut hair. One reason, he never really tried to learn too much, but the other, he never took the master barber test. He wasn't quite sure what to do.
I would just stand at my girlfriend's house, man, and I'd go hang out with her at work sometimes. Didn't really mess with nobody because I wanted to get away from that whole train thought of way to live. So I changed my number, cut off all my friends, man. I wanted to get all this out of my system.
He started working for his girlfriend's dad in an upholstery shop. He was making about $300 a week, but he stayed the course until one day he broke his arm on the job and he had to get surgery. Something went wrong in the procedure and his hand was paralyzed.
So basically, man, it took about a year and a half for my hand to come back. And during that time, I was able to get back in my barber book. Because you got to take this big barber test, man. I'm talking about it's hard.
It has chemistry, medical stuff. He studied and studied.
So re-signed up, went and take it, man, and passed, man. And got certified to be a barber. And that was crazy.
Ronnie worked at three different barber shops to get experience, gleaning different skills from the different barbers at those locations. But it was a slow road to doing it well.
Honestly, man, I never had so many people tell me they was going to the ATM and didn't come back.
While he was working at a Kurdish-owned barber shop, he saw a space that was already set up to cut hair. You remember the space next to the coffee shop? It was for rent. He took a chance and signed a lease. Started fixing the place up. He would work at the Kurdish shop during the day and at his own place at night, passing out cards all the time.
So I was keeping the clientele building, kind of like in the same sense of, you know, doing the wrong thing, but now doing it the right way so I could see how, you know, I was formed and how I was, you know, able to use my bad ways of doing things for a good way. And
he was using the skills he learned selling drugs to get clients and take care of them, which I think it's fascinating to know that during all of the struggles and bad decisions Ronnie made over the years, his experience has really shaped him into an incredible community barber.
Here we are 4 years later.
And now every day, Ronnie shows up and earns his keep $15 at a time.
Life is about inches and not about miles, but as you get the inches together, the miles will come. So just trying to nail the small things every day, you know, as far as my walk and talk.
Ronnie is running a place where everyone feels welcome. There are Latinos, African Americans, whites, most of them coming in once a week.
So what kind of things you normally talk about in a day?
Basically, man, just, you know, how people's doing. You know, I like to just be a good influence, man. You know, anything I can do to rub off on somebody and make their day better, man. That's basically what my life consists of, man. So just try to shine a little light, man, and, you know, talk it out with people, man, and just be real with them, man, and hey, get some good conversations and some good times out of the barbershop, along with some fresh cuts.
Yeah.
Neighbors is from Nashville Public Radio and produced by me, Jacob Lewis. This story was edited by Mac Linebaugh, Emily Siner, and Anita Bug. Music from Poddington Bear, and this song is by Dan Burns. If you like the show, please leave a rating or review in iTunes. I love reading them. Neighbors is also a proud and founding member of The Herd. That's H-E-A-R-D. We're an audio collective of producers scattered all over. And one of the founding members is Vanessa Lowe with her amazing show about the night called Nocturne. And spoiler, you'll hear my voice in this clip from an episode she did about flying dreams.
While I'm launching in to my leap, I'm doing these twists and somersaults and turns.
You're soaring above the ground.
Leaping, running.
If I could get up enough speed, I could get off the ground, and then it would take a lot for me to come down again.
There's nothing holding me back. I'm defying gravity and the laws of physics.
For more information on Nocturne and all the shows in The Herd, visit theherdradio.com. That's H-E-A-R-D. Well, I'm Jacob Lewis, and with the colder weather coming up, I hope you're getting enough vitamin C and drinking things
like orange juice.
Get to know your neighbors.